Okay. You're not going to have to look too far is exactly right. Okay. All right.
Valerie's going to loan me her gun.
Okay. Ladies, let's begin with our blessing. Baruch atah Elohim melech haolam asher bachar banu mikol hamim v'natan lanu et torato baruch atah noten haTorah. Amen. The final announcement is that that my daughter-in-law is expecting the beginning of November, so please keep your eyes posted for any email. I will definitely send an email out if I'm not going to be here, if I leave like that. Okay, so.
Can you tell the office also?
Yes, I will tell the office also. All right. Okay, so as I said, this is her fourth. She's never been early, but that doesn't mean anything. So because every child is different. You cannot... Past performance does not predict future experiences at all. All right. This week we are on Parshat Noach, the second Parsha of the Torah. And we are on page 31. This class comes, the ideas come from a class by Reverend Shira Smiles and the sources that she quotes there. Margaret, I'm sorry, did you start to add something?
Sorry. I got your email, I think today or yesterday, about this being the beginning of the year. But wasn't last week the beginning?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just those who didn't make it last week. It's
which was me.
We're a new beginning. We can always begin again because now we're in a new month. So now we're in the month of Cheshvan. So a new beginning. It is the beginning. Because some people were confused. They weren't sure that we had started last week. So I just wanted everybody to know that we actually were starting and had started. Okay. All right, Noach. Let's read about Noach, and we're going to read the very first line, and then we're going to talk about the ark and the whole scenario about why he was commanded to build an ark, why he was commanded to build an ark of all things, and what the different layers of meaning are for us, as well as what they were for him and the people who lived in his generation. So we're going to try to understand this on a variety of levels, all with insight and information on how we can improve our lives and what the message is for us, especially in this time. So let's just start with verse 9 and just see the introduction of who Noah is. Alisa, would you like to begin just that first verse?
These are the offspring of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God.
Okay, great. So we're learning about Noah, and what do we know about him?
He was a righteous man.
He was a righteous man. It says he was an Ish Tzaddik, so it means a righteous man, and he was also
perfect
in his generations. Okay, what does that do?
Comparison.
I'm sorry?
Comparison.
Okay, it's a qualifier. Not that he was just perfect, and he was perfect. He was perfect in his generations. So that means a little bit, everything's all relative. It's not like, you are great considering everybody else in the class. You know, it's like, is that a compliment or what?
Okay. He was graded on the curve.
Yeah, exactly. He was at the peak.
Or really, the opposite. It's a huge compliment because everyone is evil, and then it's even more amazing to go against the current.
Absolutely. So it is done as both a compliment to Noach as well as a criticism, because he stood out among the others, because clearly he was above all the other people of his generation, because he and his family are the only ones who are saved. So it wasn't that there was a whole group of people. So this curve, it wasn't even a curve, it was more like a point, okay? And he was it. He was the Ish Tzaddik. He was the righteous person. And to go against the grain of what everyone else in your society is doing is absolutely incredibly difficult. Now, we know that Abraham did the same thing. Okay, so this is in and of itself, a lesson for us to be able to withstand pressure of what the majority is doing. Is an incredibly challenging, difficult. So we name our children Noach. He is not, we don't say, well, you were good enough considering, though we also say, well, he was good enough considering. So we're going to actually look at it from both sides. So it is both a compliment as well as a a message to us that he was a tamim haya, he was perfect, bedorotav, for his generations. And it also says that he walked with God. Because we're told, what's one of the commands that we're told is, v'halachta bidrachav, you shall walk in God's ways. You shall walk with God. So he walked with God, he was perfect in his generations, and he was a tzaddik. Thank you for another tzaddikus. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, shehakol nihyeh bidvaro.
Amen. Amen. But interesting, in Hebrew it says the other, it says et ha-Elohim italech Noach.
Uh-huh.
With God, Noach went with. Interesting, it's opposite.
It's opposite. Very good. So the grammar is opposite, which is what Gabi is pointing out. And it really, and it does, it says, et ha-Elohim italech Noach, instead of im. It doesn't say with God, it says et, which is really an unusual grammar. You would say, you shall walk with God. Et doesn't mean with.
No. What does it mean?
There's no word.
There's no word.
It means something active, but active.
It's used before a noun.
Does it mean an action takes place?
On it.
Like, for example, and you have et.
Right.
Have the some, and then you say the name.
Right. Ani Yochavet et Gabi.
Et Elohim.
Right.
But this is upside down. It should be Noach italech im Elohim.
Right.
And it says
first God and then, yes.
Walk Noach. It's upside down.
It's upside down and inside out. So the grammar is a little weird because there was something missing in Noach. And so what we're going to learn is from the ark and the whole experience and his command to build an ark, we're going to learn that even from somebody who is a tzaddik, even from somebody who is great in their generations, we're not talking about perfection here. We're talking about something, there's still something for us to learn, otherwise we wouldn't have to hear the story. So the Torah is instruction. If it's instruction, it means we have something to learn, so that's what we're going to delve into right now. Marcia.
So does this portend anything about after the flood and how he was imperfect?
He was definitely imperfect after the flood, because we know when he planted the vineyard, which I think we spoke about either last year or the year before, about how he got drunk right afterwards and then debased himself. He was debased and debased himself, and things went downhill again. So he has a lot of great qualities. He is an ish tzaddik, and as I say, we name our children Noach. So there's no shame in this. This is like one of the good names, one of the good people. And at the same time, we have what to learn. So let's see what we have to learn from this.
So is this foreshadowing that?
This is foreshadowing. This is telling us, yes, and it's because it's a quality that he has that is trying to be worked on, that we have to work on something. And it's going to be a challenge that is going to, after the flood and after he comes off the ark, we'll see that it didn't go as well as planned, even with all the work that was done. And the whole world doesn't really get rescued until Avraham comes along. Okay, when Avraham comes along, it sets everything back on the proper footing. You could say that Noach, in a way, was the failed Avraham. He had the potential Avraham, and he went very far and didn't get as far as Avraham did. So this is like, the first person who was supposed to go far was Adam, and that went poorly. And then Noach showed the greatest potential of anybody, and that did well, but didn't go the best either. And then Avraham comes along, like the third time's a charm, so when Avraham. But let's delve into this, because I really would like to be able to explore all of the different layers here.
I just want to make a real quick comment. Noah, it sounds like he was completely surrounded later. He was completely surrounded by awful people.
Well, the only people who were left were his family.
But I mean before, with all these people.
Oh, right. Oh, yes. Oh, right, before the flood.
That's like...
Yes, that was what Gabi was saying.
Yeah.
To be able to withstand the pressure of everybody going in such a negative, debased way, and to go to stand your ground and not go that way is incredibly wonderful. So what we want to avoid here is black and white thinking about this. It's not that we're going to come to the conclusion, okay, now we know Noah wasn't so great, or no, Noah was amazing, perfect, 100%. What we want to see is Noah was a person, a human being with human struggles, the struggles that you and I have as well. So let's go into this and see what we are taught here. Okay. First of all, we see that the status of the world, which is easy to see, and Valerie, why don't you read that, just verse 11 and 12.
Now the earth had become corrupt before God, and the earth had become filled with robbery. And
God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupted, for all flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth.
The main idea being?
Corruption.
Corrupted, okay? Everything was corrupted, and the corruption of the people filtered down into the corruption of the animals as well as to the very earth itself. Because at that time, before the flood, it says that the earth was very responsive to human behavior. When human behavior was depraved, it had an impact on the earth as well and the animals as well, which is why God destroys everything. Everything has to be destroyed. Susan?
Why does it specifically say robbery?
Very good. So robbery, says what is robbery? Says that the robbery that they did was that when you start taking from other people, stealing from other people, it says God can handle the affronts to God's self. But when people are interacting in that way, so there is no longer a civilized approach of one person to another, that's the end of it. And it says that they took things, so the example in the Midrash is given, it says that they took things that were worth less than a pruta, like less than a penny. That somebody would go into somebody's store and take a grape. But everybody did it. So now there, you can't take someone to court for stealing a grape because the value is less than a pruta. However, if everybody takes a grape, then what does the storekeeper have?
Zero.
Nothing. And no money and no inventory. So it was that they did it without even any qualms. Like I see people going to the store and they pop the things in their mouth. It's like, and you say, oh, it's a store, you know. Now, they're charging a price to account for that, but that's not good. You're not supposed to do that. So people did that. So I don't want to go into that too much because I want to get to where we're going. But the robbery was like the last straw. And God is saying they're so corrupt, they don't even have any shame about this. They are stealing from one another. They have no regard, no respect. It is complete corruption. And yes, and the word is, I was going to say, the word in Hebrew is Hamas.
Is that the perfect translation?
Where does it say Hamas?
That's the Hebrew is Hamas. How would you, there's not a good, it's a.
Hamas is a terrible disaster. I don't know. It's really not there, right there.
Oh, yeah.
Violence. Okay. So this is, let's get a picture in your mind of the worst of the worst. This is what we're talking about.
And they chose themselves to be called Hamas.
I know. It makes you wonder.
It means the same thing in Arabic and Hebrew.
Okay. Ladies, I know this is like so exciting, and I'm so happy that you are into it. Let's get to our ark because that's where our answers lie, okay, where we're trying to understand. So we get the picture. Everything was as bad as it could get. And when I say stealing and say like people are doing it at the store, I'm not really talking that God's looking at us and seeing us that King Super is taking a grape and saying, I'm going to destroy the world. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a depravity, a indifference to other people, a self-centered, completely it's only about me and what I want, my desires, so this was like what was going on sexually, the sexual depravity that was going on, all like disgusting, lowly, all boundaries, all law was off, out. It was like there was no hope. There was no hope. Okay. And God's like, I am reconsidering the fact that I created this world. That's what it said in the end of last week's parsha. I'm going to destroy the world, and it's going to be through a flood. So God says to Noah, and let's pick it up there. Renee, would you like to read verse 13?
God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with robbery through them, and behold, I am about to destroy them from the earth.
Okay, so Noah is being told there's going to be a destruction. Now, jumping ahead, when we get to in the parsha with Abraham, when Sodom is evil and God is planning to destroy Sodom,
very
and
different.
He tells Abraham that, what does Abraham do?
Oh,
I'm like, well, if there, what about this many people? Would you save it in the merit of this many people? And he argues. In the end, Sodom is destroyed. However, the whole point is Abraham prays for them. Abraham comes to, wants to defend Abraham. It wasn't like Abraham thought the people in Sodom were any great shakes. He was looking, they were horrible people. Horrible people. And that being said, he was still like, is there somebody righteous there? Can you save him? He opens his mouth with such love and kindness and caring for other people. And Noah, what does Noah say?
Okay, all right.
He doesn't say, anything. He says nothing. And then God tells him, verse 14, Beth Ann, why don't you continue?
Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make the ark with compartments and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is,
yes, verse 15
this
as well.
This is how you should make it. 300 cubits the length of the ark, 50 cubits its width, and 30 cubits its height. A window shall you make for the ark, and to a cubic finish it from above. Put the entrance of the ark on its side. Make it with bottom, second, and third bend.
Okay, stop there. All right. God goes in, and the first thing to tell him is, you need to make an ark. This is going to be to save you, is to make an ark. And the dimensions of the ark are given, very specific. They were told exactly how the ark is going to be made. There's also some beautiful midrashim and insights into what those numbers all mean. But it basically sounds, it doesn't sound like a bizarre thing, it sounds like an ark. Like if you were going to build a big boat or a yacht or something to save a lot of people, this is nothing crazy. This is a natural response. If there is going to be a flood, what would you normally build? A boat, okay? That's not bizarre. That's not a strange thing. So the question is asked just on that. God could have saved Noah and his family in any number of ways. Right? That's just the normal, natural way. But it could have been more like how it was with the plagues, where we notice the plagues in Egypt, that when the different plagues hit the Egyptians, there was a boundary in the place where the Jewish people lived. There was no plague. It was completely fine. Even darkness, there was light. If there was hail, there was nothing. All the things, where there was blood, there was water. Everything was perfectly fine, and God just carved out a boundary and made it. God could have made like a magic carpet and float him up above and have him not come even near the water. Could have put him, wrapped him in like a little space suit that he wouldn't have felt anything. So there are many miraculous ways that God could have saved Noah, but he specifically and intentionally has him do something that is in the realm of normal. So there is an idea that says that God works miracles primarily through a natural means so that we have an opportunity to say, oh, well, he was in the ark, that's why he was saved. Or we can say it was still a miracle. It was a miracle cloaked in nature. It was a miracle cloaked in the ordinary. It's still a miracle because we know from what we learn from about the waters of the flood that this wasn't just basic flood waters. This was hot boiling water. This was water coming from the depths as well as from above. This was like an opening the floodgates of water, destructive waters. This was only made out of gopher wood. Even that sounds kind of goofy. Gopher wood. It's a strong wood, but it would have been, you know, that we saw, you even see that when there's flooding, just simple flooding, people are in boats or they're in a raft or something, and it gets tossed and knocked around. And it was raining for 40 days and 40 nights. We're talking about a lot of rain. We're talking about things smashing, caving. We're talking about wholesale destruction. The truth is, that ark shouldn't have done anything for him. It should have been just like, you know, here, why don't you build an ark? Like, rearrange the chairs on the decks of the Titanic while you're at it. It's like, it should have done nothing. However, it did do something because it was still a miracle. The other thing we learn is that even the size of it should not have held all of the animals and everything that went into it. Because we learn, in addition to Noah and his family, that there is going to be, all the animals are going on. And what does he say? Go on to the next page in verse 33. In addition to all of the animals, from every bird according to its kind, verse 20. Every animal from each thing that creeps on the ground according to its kind, two of each thing shall come to you to keep alive. And then let's take a look at verse 21. Marcia, can you read that?
I think
so. Okay, verses 21. Yeah, verses 21. Yeah, just verse 21.
Every food that is eaten, and gather it into yourself, that it shall be as food for you and for them.
Okay, who's the them? Who's the food? Animal. Now you picture this. You picture you're going on a vacation for like a few days, and the food you take for your family. I can tell you, when we go to the mountains, like for two nights.
Right, same.
Three cars worth of stuff. Like with our grandchildren, it's like, Who's even eating all this food? Now, picture, this is going to be a year-long process. This is going to be food for every animal and for Noah and his family for a year. It's like, and all those animals. By after the 40 days and 40 nights of the rain, by the time the waters subside and everything else and the ground is ready for rehabitation by human beings, it's a whole year. So this is a long haul process. And they're going onto this ark. It's like, this ark isn't big enough for that, because let's look at what the size is. So let's go back to looking at verse 15. 300 cubits. Now a cubit, let's just say for the average, is about 20 inches. It's the length from the top of the middle finger to the elbow on a man, an average size. That's a cubit. Say it's about 20 inches. So 20 inches, 300 cubits. So that is, so let's say it's, let's just use 2 feet. That's big. But 2 feet times 300. So how many feet are we talking about? 600 feet. How big is that?
2 football fields.
2 football fields. Okay, we're talking. Okay, that's not that big. So what's interesting about these measurements is God also didn't say, make an ark 2 feet by 3 feet by 4 feet, and I will create a miracle, and you're all going to fit in there. It wasn't itsy bitsy, and it wasn't make something that is so ginormous that everyone for sure would say, well, of course the boat is what saved you. It was an ark that was like a normal size ark of what you might think you could use possibly, but clearly it would never have been enough. So it needs to be in the realm of nature, just enough in the middle to be able to say, to ask the question, was this a miracle or was it a boat? Is it God or was it not? It's similar to the splitting of the sea, that God specifically is recorded in the, records for us in the Torah that there was a tremendous wind that blew the night before. It says, because you could say, well, it was the wind. Or you can say it was God's hand.
Many
do say, because those are the people of, O ye of little faith, right? So the people, you have to be able to have bechira, you have to be able to have choice in your faith and to be able to see God's hand. So that's the first level, is that God gives him the command to build an ark of something that seems kind of normal. He's not going to do a miracle and have him levitate him off the ground and not even be in the flood at all. He's going to have him actually be in the flood. And when you are on an ark, can you imagine? Now, I get seasick really easily, but can you imagine what it felt like in there? This wasn't like how it's portrayed in the cartoons, smooth sailing with Noah and the animals all poking their heads out. The animals weren't poking their heads out. The animals, everyone was inside, sealed in for a year. Okay, it's like, okay, so there was, it was like, we have an air problem to start with. Okay, so there was a window. There was a window, but it was for a certain kind of light and for air. That being said, if you're being tossed about like that, how's everybody feeling in there?
Claustrophobic.
It's a miracle that they weren't like all heaving. Including all the animals. It's like animals aren't looking really to be like tossed around by the water either. So why did God put him, what kind of, it's like, thanks a lot. If you're going to save me, couldn't you have saved me in like in a way that would be a little bit more pleasant? But why would God want Noah in that ark and experiencing the flood that way?
Well, because Noah wasn't really all that great. He didn't try to warn other people.
Okay, and therefore?
So he had to suffer a little bit. He was going to be saved, but it wasn't the most pleasant experience for
okay.
him and his wife and kids.
Okay, so now suffering is always for a benefit. What was it? What was he supposed to learn from this, Renee?
I think it's to so that Hashem could teach him that he needs to be vulnerable, and that everything not to feel like he's entitled to be saved.
Okay. All right. So it could be even just like the sense of like ego of not being entitled. And let's go on to kind of picking up of what Elisa says. Bethann.
I have an opposite thinking. I was thinking it could be for the people who are watching him, because he never argued with God. So Hashem is now giving them a chance to kind of argue with him. No, save us. We'll do better. We'll see what's going on.
Which them? Which
dead.
Them? The people
the
are
people,
dead.
Well,
which people?
The other people.
They're all dead.
Before.
I was talking about why did God put him on the ark in the water at the time? Why didn't he just float it away? What is the benefit of Noah suffering?
To grow.
In what way? What was the problem?
To grow spiritually.
Okay, so you kind of touched on it. You said he didn't pray for the people.
Well, he didn't warn them.
He didn't warn them.
Try to
Empathy. You have to go through something. If you are experiencing something, you know that if you are feeling sick and someone else says, like, I'm feeling so sick, you're like, oh, I can appreciate that. I understand. So it says this was to teach him empathy, to care about other people. If he was completely removed from the experience, completely, it would have had no beneficial impact on him other than to physically save him. Being physically saved isn't enough. The whole point is that this needed to be a teshuva. This needed to be a transformational process, just as the waters were called, like a mikvah. In fact, the waters are called Mei Noach in the Haftorah. The waters of Noach, they're late. It's almost like he is given some blame for the waters because he did not pray for the people and he did not warn them. So there's, you could say, I didn't warn them because I knew they wouldn't listen. That may be. One is still obligated to warn, and even if one can't warn effectively, one should still pray for other people. I pray that they will change. I pray that they'll do teshuva. I'll pray that they stop. He didn't do anything. He did not have that in him. So it says that even though he was able to withstand the pressure of the complete corruption of his society and of the world at that time, he was not immune from the fundamental Mida quality issue, which was not caring enough for other people. So yes, he didn't steal, so that's good, but that's not enough. Is that what we aspire to? Well, I don't steal. It's like, that's not lofty. To what we aspire to is, I am a person of such rachmanis and compassion and chesed that another person suffering, even though they're suffering from their own wrongdoing, I still want them to change. I want to pray for them. I want to pray for them. It's the least I could do.
Did it take 20 years for him to build the ark?
120 years.
Oh, 120. Wasn't the idea that people...
120 years to build the ark?
Go ahead.
People would ask him, what's going on? Why are you doing this?
No.
I don't know if anybody did ask Noah what he was doing.
No, they made fun of him. They mocked him. So it said he was supposed to build it for 120 years. Now, when people lived a lot longer then, so for us 120 years would be more than one lifetime, but people lived like 800, 900 years, 600, 700, so it was a long period of time, but it wasn't their whole life. Okay, so, but it's 120 years is still a good long time. That was designed for the people's benefit, so that they would ask and be curious, and then Noah could say, God is going to destroy us because of our wickedness. Because of your wickedness, you need to repent. And people were curious, but they were more in taunting him, like, oh, what are you building? Oh, yeah, God's really going to destroy us. More eye-rolling than heart-changing. So it didn't work, and he didn't do enough to help make it work. He was more involved in the actual process, but that's why it was designed. It says, why didn't God just send a prophet like Jonah? Like Jonah is going to send him to Nineveh and tell him in 40 days God is going to destroy the city unless you change, and they all changed. Said, because the people of Nineveh were actually good people. They were good people who had just gone off track. And if people are basically good people, you can send a prophet to them and they are more likely to change. But when people are completely corrupted, you don't have anything to work with. So God needed, because God himself had Rachmanis on the people, it's like, I'm going to give him 120 years. That's pretty patient, if you ask me. 120 years to change, 120 years to do teshuvah, and to arouse their curiosity to help them with that process. It says, if somebody is totally corrupt, there's no hope for them. So sometimes we have to say to ourselves, do we turn deaf ear to warnings that are given to us, insight, messages, musar, you know, kind of somebody telling us something? If we're not listening, it may be that there's something wrong with our mitos, that there's something wrong with our character, that we should at least say, like, oh, wow, that's a really good point. You know, it's very hard to change. I'm not sure I can do it, but I hear that that's what I should be doing. Even recognizing I should be doing this or I should be stopping this is something that's good, because that means there's hope. If somebody is like, I'm not listening because I don't hear a problem, that means that we're talking about a big problem. And we know that Noah was not successful in getting anyone else to do teshuva, because you notice that no one else got on that boat with him after 120 years of building other than the original family members who were designated to get on the boat, which means that he was 120 years, was a failure to do that, that he was not able to convince anybody.
Yes. Well, maybe the 120 years was
an I'm sorry, Susan?
Even his own family members didn't have such great care.
I mean, they were, he had some difficulties, as we see after the flood, of what happens with his family. But this was the best of what God had to work with, which is a flawed human being. So,
I keep coming back to the same question. Why didn't God just take it all out and start again?
He did.
He didn't.
No. What do you mean? He started, I mean, start over, like with Adam?
Yeah, like
start over? See, I guess he wanted to continue on.
Not so good. I know we'll never know.
Yeah.
But that keeps going through my mind.
It's like, just start over. I guess he thought that he needs to start with somebody who looked the most promising. Uh-huh. Because if he started over, then you'd have the same thing again. You would probably have the exact same thing that happened with Adam. So when he starts over with Noah, and then it's another 10 generations until Abraham, God lets it go until Abraham himself chooses to be in relationship with God. See, we see with Noah was chosen by God. That still didn't go so well. It's not until Abraham chooses himself, way before God ever talks to him. He's like 75 before God ever has a word with him. It's like, let me see who wants this. And that's how we see this. Like, that's the basis. Who wants it? And that's who the Jewish people are. We are the ones who want it. Hopefully everybody else will want it sooner rather than later. But for now, the Jewish people are the designated wanters. We are chosen because we chose. We were the choosers. We chose to be in this relationship. And God's like, okay, now I can work with you. Because it's not working from scratch, and it's not working when I choose somebody. So it needs to be somebody who is self-chosen, and then we can create the covenant. And that's the only thing that's going to work. So that's the hope. Eventually, hopefully everybody else will get to it. Now, so what happens on this ark? Noah and his family are on the ark with all of these animals. Now, just picture. Every single animal. Says that maybe the unicorn didn't make it on, that was like one thing. That's actually one of the Midrashim, that there was a unicorn and he didn't make it on. And so that's why we don't have him anymore. But that's a different story for a different time. It says, what did Adam, the fish were not killed.
Right, but you said it was boiling water.
Boiling water, the fish were able to survive. That's one of the reasons we eat fish on Shabbos. It says the fish had a special, because they had the quality that they were not corrupted, that they have the quality of tznius, of modesty and privacy, because they stay below the water, and they keep their eyes open.
They don't talk, so
no lashon hara. Their mouths move, but they say nothing. Okay. Actually, yeah, it's pretty funny. My granddaughter, she has a little fish, and goldfish, and with fins, she goes, he's waving at me. So. Like, anyway, all right, so the fish were fine, which is why one of the reasons we eat fish on Shabbos. But Noah and his family, what did they do for that entire year? All they did, day and night, feed the animals.
And clean the
booth. And that was all they did for the entire year. So they didn't sleep. They couldn't do anything because every animal has its own cycle of when it eats. You have your nocturnal animals. You have your... whatever, daytime animals. This one eats in the morning, this one eats three times a day, this one eats this. It says that there was one incident of Noah not feeding an animal on time, and I think it bit him, like in a not nice place. So it's like, it says they were busy the whole time with feeding animals. So think about, what does this mean? What is the rehabilitation of Noah and his family through this process? Caring for others. And it's not like, oh yes, I also like peanut butter and jelly. I can see why you like it too. This is like, okay, I'm feeding this animal, wants this. This animal wants that. You want it here. You want it there. You want it then. You want it now. It's like that, if so much putting yourself out and beyond your way of thinking about you and yourself and me, myself, and I. Taking care of animals. This is why we talk about, like, it's good to have for children to have animals and learn how to take care of them and to think about something else that is dependent on them. These animals were dependent on Noah as well. When you have a society that has been corrupted, where they are stealing from one another and there's no sense of dependency or interdependency, it's all about I am me, myself, and I am here for me and what I can get and when I want it. Feeding these animals for a year and taking care of all of their needs was designed to break this ego down and to be like, oh, the mice, what do they need? Oh, my gosh, okay, the rats, the lion, okay, the cheetah, oh, the snakes, what do we get for them? It's like, there's the constant awareness of what others need. It says this was a boat This was a chesed machine. This was a transformation place for Noah and his families, because the new world was going to be built. It says, Olam chesed yibaneh. A world of chesed, of giving, is what is going to be built. Is only a world that is built on the premise of chesed is the one that is going to last. Elisa and then Susan.
Well, also, this is in contrast to one of the corruptions of the people, other people, was that they were cruel to animals.
Oh, and that's interesting.
That's what Rabbi Engel said.
Okay.
Because in the Noahide laws, you know, doesn't it say...
Right, you can't pull a limb off a living animal to eat it.
And I don't know if Noah had any animals before the flood. But, I mean, presumably he was not cruel to any animals.
He was not. But he was way, not cruel.
If he had animals. But anyway, this way, it's in contrast to what the other people were doing.
Well, it's interesting because they say, like in people, if you're looking for signs of whether people are abusive, to look and see how they treat their pets.
Yeah.
And there was a story I read one time. It was like a girl, maybe it was a fiction story, but the first thing she saw was that this wonderful person she was engaged to kicked her dog. And she knew that there was going to be something wrong, and in fact there was. But this is how people treat animals is a real sign, because how you treat something that is defenseless, that is dependent on you. So anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
It also says that the animals that were in the sexual perversion were not allowed on the ark.
The animals that were involved in sex, right, any animal that had been used in sexual perversion with people were not allowed on the ark, because the people were mating, you know, women were, that's one of the prohibitions of the Torah, is a person cannot mate with an animal. And it used to be that women would whatever and the animals would whatever, and so any animal that was involved in that could not get on the ark.
And men did it too, right?
Oh, man, too, also, absolutely.
Well, and the animals, I think...
Okay, we're going to actually... Yeah. Hold on a second. Let's go ahead. Susan,
I'm... reminding me, too, that I think some rehabilitation programs in prisons involve taking care of animals.
Yes, they do. I have read that. That it opens up the compassion so people... Because most people don't have baggage issues with animals, most likely, where they might with people and other things, and it helps them open them up. So it was therapeutic. So Noah is on this ark for the year, not just like, oh, I'm being saved while everyone else is being wiped out. There was work to be done as well. And this is what we're supposed to learn. If you're wiped out, then you're done. Your turn in this world and chance for learning has ended. If you're alive, then you're still a work in progress. And Noah and his family were works in progress, and they were meant to also be rehabilitated in addressing the character quality that was still a problem for Noah. The fact that he didn't do anything wrong. You know, it's like if your child comes home with a report card and it says, your child never does anything wrong. You're like, that's good. But that's, again, it's not what we aspire to. Or you have your evaluation at work, and they say, you've never done anything wrong. You've never made any mistakes. It's like, and what's my contribution? A person who's not contributing, that is a huge, tremendous lack. And Noah was not a contributor in that way. Even the act of him building the ark was given to him as an opportunity to put forth some effort into doing something. If God would have just provided him with, a magic carpet for him to hop onto and sail away, you could have a physical saving, but it wouldn't have benefited him. When somebody works and invests their effort, because he did work, 120 years is a long time to put into any project. Just, you know, going to, you know, Home Depot and getting the lumber and getting all the supplies, and he had to get it, and he had very specific instructions about what it was he had to do. Bless you. That idea of putting in effort is called moser nefesh. It means to invest yourself, to go above and beyond yourself. It wasn't what he was normally doing. God didn't go to somebody who was already a boat builder and say, hey, you're a boat builder, I think I'll save you. He went to Noah, who's like, I'm not a boat builder. So for him to be involved in that effort over that long period of time, it says to become invested in that, it says when we invest ourselves in anything, it gives us merit. It says, Noah needed more merit to be saved, and he needed the 120 years of building to gain the merit, additional merit, to be saved. that he was a good, okay, you're good to start with, we're selecting you, but you still need more. You need more work. And the work is at least being involved in the effort of building the ark was something that gave him that merit and also allowed the ark to save him. So that we, when we are involved in things, even in the physical world, we invest things with our effort. The thing that itself is able to then go above and beyond what it might normally be able to do. It has extra potential. It has extra potential.
What is extra potential?
Even physical things. Even physical things that we invest ourselves in, they gain a spiritual dimension that takes them to a power above and beyond what it would normally have. We see that even... Right, the challah bake, putting in, like when we make the challah next Thursday night at 7 o'clock at the Marriott, the tech center, says one of the things we do, that we'll be doing, is we will be praying for people as we make the challah. That dough gets invested with the prayers and the heartfelt wishes for other people. And then that dough then is precious. And people say, this tastes really good. It's like, what are you tasting? It's like, you're tasting the love in there. You're tasting the chesed, the outpouring of ourselves that we put into it. And it makes a difference. And that bread is then physically more nourishing than your average normal piece of bread. It's not just the sum. You don't just take the calories, nutrients, etc. of the ingredients. It has a higher and a different and a better ability to nourish because it has spiritual nourishment as well as physical nourishment in it. And it gets invested by what we put into it. Now the truth is, that's true with everything we do in our lives. Whatever we put into it, whatever we are doing, elevates even the thing itself to give it greater power in this world. And that's an equation that God has set into motion. And it starts when we see right with Noah, that the effort that he put into building that, said, if God wanted an ark, so let God slowly put together an ark and have it just materialize over 120 years. You would have the curiosity factor, you would have an ark factor, a boat factor, but you wouldn't have the person of Noah putting himself into it and being what's called moser nefesh, of investing himself. So Noah's whole program from beginning to end was an attempt to help him transform from what he was to what he had the potential to become. And he grew significantly, but it wasn't as much as it could have been, and it doesn't end up lasting. It only gets passed down to really one of his children, who is Shem. And Shem is the one who, like we come from, that's Semites, that it's through the house of Shem that the Jewish people come. And that he was the one who was transformed, and that he then teaches the Torah. He teaches that in the future. It says that he had a yeshiva, the yeshiva of Shem and Ever. So Ever was Shem's son. Jacob went to the yeshiva of Shem and Ever. Okay, before he goes to Lavan, and that's Noah. That's Noah's son and grandson.
So Ever is the son of
Jacob.
Yitzchak that learned to that
issue. Yitzchak also. Oh. Actually, Yitzchak learned with Avraham. After the Akedah. He may have gone there after the Akedah.
Abraham and the two men that came from.
Returned, but not. It doesn't say Yitzchak.
Yeah, we don't know where.
So right.
Just that Yitzchak went to that.
Went there.
So did he? I never knew what happened.
Okay, let's stay focused. Okay, all right. When we talk about being able to go above and beyond, it says that when it says that Noah was a tzaddik, that means he was a tzaddik, he was a righteous person. But there's a higher level person, which is called a chassid. And I don't mean like a chassidic person, we're not talking about that. It's called a chassid from the word chassid. And the chassid is someone who goes above and beyond. A tzaddik is a person who does the right, who's not making the mistakes. A chassid is a person, it's translated sometimes as pious, but it really is related to the word chesed, and the word chesed means to go above and beyond. When we go above and beyond with other people, and we go above and beyond what we think we are capable of, it says that God treats us Mida keneged mida. That God is our shadow. If we go above and beyond, God goes above and beyond. If we want to trigger an above and beyond response from God when we need it, that means we need to go above and beyond in what we are doing. Above and beyond what we thought we were capable of. Whether that is in specific mitzvah observance, whether it's in our personality and character traits, whatever it is, specifically in the area of chesed, of kindness to other people, of going above and beyond what we thought we could do. This does not mean exhausting oneself to the point of sickness. This means opening ourselves up and thinking about the other person and praying for them, helping them, extending ourselves to them. Opening our hearts also in the direction of God as well, of going above and beyond. So that word of going above and beyond is also captured in another Hebrew word, which is ma'od, which means very. Okay? If someone says, tov ma'od, it's thank you, very, very good. It's very good. So it's interesting, because when we look at the Shema, and we talk about how we're supposed to love God, it says that we shall be ahavta et Hashem elokecha, you shall love the Lord your God, bechol, all your heart, bechol levavcha, bechol nafshecha, and all of your soul, uvechol me'odecha. And it's always translated as your wealth or as your whatever, but it doesn't mean wealth. That doesn't, me'odecha doesn't mean wealth. It means your me'odness, your veriness, your ability to go me'od, very, more. That we not limit ourselves to our definition of ourselves, like, well, this is who I am and this is what I do. That could be b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, but u'v'chol me'odecha, because each of these things represents a crescendo. B'chol levavcha, your heart. Your heart's good. Your soul is even more. So that means the third thing has to be even more than that, because this is a literary thing. This, this, and this. So the this has to be more than the previous two. What's more than the previous two? Your me'odecha, with all of your me'odness, that your ability to go above and beyond, that is what God is looking for as a requirement of all of us, not just like, oh, some super spiritual, amazing people, they do that. It's like all of us love God with all our hearts, with all our soul, and with all of our me'odness. The word me'od is also the same letters as the word Adam. So the Adam, Ma'od is Mem, Aleph, Dalet. Adam is Aleph, Dalet, Mem. It says that the essence of a human being is to become Ma'od. A person is not meant to stay still, static, and on the same level. We are meant to become Ma'od. We are supposed to become even more. We know this also is even a reference in Bereshit, on the day of creation, on the sixth day. On all the other days when God says, and God saw and said that it was good. But on the sixth day when human beings are created, it was, and God said it was tov me'od. It was very good. And it was like, what was so very good about it? The creation of Adam, who is the same words, aleph dalet mem, mem aleph dalet. So that God, that we, the human beings, are created to be ma'od, and that is the what was being inculcated into Noah and his family, that was going to be the beginning of the new creation, that it needed to start again and needed to be literally all hands on deck, and literally all hands on deck of Noah and his family, doing things to build themselves into chesed people. Now, what's very interesting is they didn't sit around and think about chesed. And think about kindness, and think about being, you know, open to other people. It says they had to do something. It says we are shaped through our actions. We can think and do all that all we want, but it will never get us where we need to be. So we are shaped by our actions. God's like, I want you to be more giving people. Therefore, I'm going to put you in this boat. And let you simultaneously, God is an amazing teacher, multiple level lessons at the same time. You're going to be in the water and feel the shakeup so that you can feel something, so that it arouses your compassion and pity on what the other people are dealing with. And at the same time, I'm going to open you up by having to take care of these animals. God could have arranged something else for the animals also, kind of like the start again thing. Could have like, okay, we'll save the people, but why did those specific animals have to be on board? Like, make new animals. Yeah, you made them the first time. It's not like it was too hard for you. So if you want to keep the people part, so keep the people, let them be saved, and then create new animals. You had to schlep all those animals on board too. It's like, it's not for the animals' benefit. It was for Noah's benefit. The whole world is created for the benefit of human beings. Susan.
So this is really very difficult idea of when we're suffering or undergoing some sort of challenges, it's to improve our character. So you should know.
Yes, it's very difficult. So when we are challenged and we are suffering something, so a couple things happen, and we'll conclude with this. There are lots of opportunities when we are challenging, when we are suffering. First of all, when we suffer something, it has the tremendous potential to help us have more compassion for other people who are suffering the same thing. It's very hard to really feel it. First of all, we can never get in anybody else's place to begin with. That's just the bottom line. But the closer we can come, the better. And so having challenges and suffering gives us the opportunity to be able to appreciate other people's suffering. And for that reason alone, there are many who would say, it was worth it to suffer just to open me up to other people's suffering in this area. And to say, wow, I have a new understanding of what this means and what this feels like that I never understood before. I wasn't looking for it, but now I have it. And at the same time, that the suffering may be calling on me to develop in a way that I didn't know that I could, or I didn't know that I needed to develop in such a way. Because that suffering may call for something from me in my character, an amount of patience, an amount of I don't know, whatever it might be, trusting other people, letting other people help me. There could be myriad things that this challenge is forcing me or encouraging me or directing me to address in my own life that I can do. And it's not that God is trying to punish me. It's not like God says, you are bad and therefore you're going to have this. It's like, I want you to grow and I'm going to give you this. I'm giving you this for your benefit. The other opportunity, along with the being able to appreciate what other people are going through, is just like Noah, we are supposed to pray for other people. And when we are going through a challenge, there's an organization, and I don't have the information with me, there's an organization that will match you up with a person who is going through your same challenge so that you can pray for them. It says that when we pray, it says when a person prays for their friend who needs the same thing that they do, their prayers are going to be answered. So I just have to clarify that. When a person, and the person needs the same thing that you do, it's when we can feel the other person's need as my own. It's like, I want this for you because I know what it feels. It's not like, okay, I pray for you, you pray for me, and then we'll both get what we want. It's not like a tit for tat thing. It's like when I can feel your need and daven for you that you should be saved from whatever it is, then that makes me into a different person. It makes the other person into a different person. It changes the equation of why there needs to be suffering and challenges in this world and opens up the possibilities for something new to happen. So I was reading an article just this morning. It was about a woman who her children had been married for a while and they were not able to have children. They didn't have children. And then she found out about somebody else who's lived, one was in Jerusalem, one was in New York, and her kids also had been married for a long time, had not had children. They decided to daven for each other every single day. And they did, and a year later, both of those families had children on the same day. Oh, wow. Born on the 28th of Tishrei, the children were born.
That's not a coincidence.
She said, it's amazing. She says, we are supposed, now you can say, I daven for someone, nothing happens. Like, we also don't know what our tefillahs do. We don't know what the impact is, how it changes the equation. It's not always so easy to connect the dots and say, I prayed for 90 days straight and then nothing happened. It's like, you don't know that nothing happened. We don't know what happened because all tefillahs, all prayers are answered. What we do know is that opening our hearts and praying for somebody else transforms who we are. And in the end, that is the answered prayer. Is that if I become a different person through opening my hearts to other people, that in the end is my goal. Because it's not really about the children. Honestly, it's not really about the health. It's not really about the finances. It's really not all about that. Those are like the props for how we live in this world. It's really about what's happening to me as a person. Am I growing? Noah was put into this ark to grow. Interestingly, the numbers, the equation for how this ark is built, which we don't need to know. No one's ever building one of these again. Okay, so if this is Torah's instructions, like, I don't need to know that it was 300 by 60 by 50 or whatever it was. However, these measurements, says all of the numbers, the 300 by 50 by 30, all of those numbers are the all Kabbalistic. First of all, they all equal the dimensions of God's name. They can all be made by the Yud and the He and the Vav and the He name of God. So that 300 is 6 times 5 times 10. So that's like Vav times He times Yud. And that you have the same thing. 50 is He times Yud. And 30 is Vav times He. So all the letters of God's name as numbers are the equation of what it was that Noah was in. It says Noah was inside God's, the reality of God, becoming and transforming. He wasn't just being saved. Physical salvation could have come in any number of ways. But the whole process, from first being told about doing it, given the 120 years, the act of making a boat, investing himself in that, bringing in the animals, having to care for them and feel the upheaval from the waters, all of that was designed to help him. Now, he could have said it, come off of there. If he would have come off of there and said, well, that was a hell of a year, that would have been a big mistake. Because sometimes we come out of our challenges, and instead of recognizing what we had the potential to learn and experience, we're just like, oh, I'm glad that's over. Well, if we say, I'm glad that's over, then we missed it. It's like, you can be glad it's over, but I'm glad it's over because I feel like I learned what I was supposed to learn about myself and do what I needed to do to move to the next level where I'm supposed to get to. God willing, all of our challenges will be ways where we can clearly see and have insight into what it is we're supposed to be doing, what it is we're supposed to be learning. If we don't know, the fallback position is always, it could be about chesed. It could be about giving to other people. It could be about being more compassionate. It could be about opening ourselves up, helping other people, extending ourselves above and beyond. That is usually the catch-all for everything else. And that if it's not that, that in and of itself is something that transforms us always. So God willing, we will always be able to use our ma'odness and our ability to be very and to go above and beyond, because what we need, and especially in these very, very challenging times for the Jewish people, we need something above and beyond anything that appears to be on the horizon. There is nothing on the radar screen that is looking like it's going to help. We need a Yeshua, we need a salvation, and we need something above and beyond the realm of the natural political world. It's not going to come from there. So our answer, the Jewish people's answer, is then we are the ones who have the opportunity and the responsibility to take ourselves above and beyond and do what seems to be slightly out of reach for ourselves, so that if we are above and beyond, that we will trigger that of heavenly divine assistance as well. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Yeah, wonderful Shabbos. Yeah. See you next week. And Eileen, have an amazing time in Israel.
Thank you. Some people would
ask me.
I just
Monday? That makes sense.